Welcome back, beloved listeners, to yet another episode of Wings Over Water, Creativity in Recovery. I am Kathy Moser, your hostess with the mostest for the second year, bringing you some interviews from the NRFA Conference, which is the Northeast Regional Folk Alliance Conference up here in Kerhonkson, New York. About 800 people gathered together, and some of those people are people in recovery, and I got to meet one of them, and he's going to share his experience about how his creativity helps his recovery and how his recovery helps his creativity. Rob McMahon, thank you so much for taking time out of this busy conference to sit down and talk to me.
You're so welcome, Kathy. Thank you for asking. It's really a pleasure.
Yay. So tell me this. How long have you been playing music?
Probably my whole life, but I picked up the guitar in high school, so, 20 years, I guess.
Uh-huh. And then how long have you been, like, doing this recovery walk?
13.
Yeah. Oh, so a lot, big overlap there. So what I ask all of my guests is, how has recovery changed your relationship with your creativity, and has it?
Quite a bit, actually, yeah. I think when I've changed mediums, actually. Like, I was playing guitar in high school, and then I sort of got into the extracurricular activities, you know. And at that point in time, I really stopped playing music entirely. Like, I didn't have the self-confidence or the self-assurance to, like, continue in my path. And other things just kind of got more important, you know, drinking and other stuff. And it just fell by the wayside, you know? And so I started doing other stuff. I mean, I stayed creative, but I sort of shifted to poetry and other stuff. And when I first got into recovery, it was, I kind of picked up the guitar again, mostly just for myself, you know, and didn't think of it as a creative thing or that I was trying to be creative. And I was doing a lot of theater then and still trying to write. And it's like been a process. I've had to jump kind of a lot of mediums in recovery because I realized that the way that I was being creative before was fairly destructive, and I had to find the ways that were fueling to me rather than sapping my energy.
So I'm interested. I actually just spoke to someone else this morning who said that, like, they had experienced that when they were in recovery, they ended up kind of shifting mediums. Can you talk about that process for you? Did you try a couple different things and go, oh, it's not this, oh, I like this, or how did that go for you?
Yeah. I think somewhere in my head, I just kind of didn't believe enough in my music, my guitar playing or anything, to, like, really even ever give it a try. Before I ended up getting into recovery. And I became like a shadow artist. And so I became like a poet because I was really good with lyrics, but I didn't think my chops were good enough to play the guitar and be like a songwriter. And so I just never even gave myself the opportunity. And then so I was doing that, and then I wanted to write this novel, and I had always kind of done theater, so I got involved in theater. It was like all of these sort of like back doors to what I really wanted to be doing, you know, and I just kind of trusted myself and trusted my creative process to take me, you know, like I moved out to Oregon right before I got into recovery, and I was going to write this novel, and it just didn't happen. Like, I just got out there and I realized, like, hey, I don't know anything about writing a novel. Like, I was a poetry writing major in college. Like, I have no idea about this. I don't know that I've read a novel in 10 years. Like, I don't even know where I got this idea from. But, yeah, and I just was kind
of
like, you know what, like, let me stop trying so hard to do that thing that I don't really, like, that the process is just, like, draining. Like, I just hate, you know, sitting here alone, basically, at this point in my life, you know, and I used to, you know, my process used to be, like, let me get as intoxicated as possible, and I'll create something, and that'll be fun, and, you know, and without the sort of intoxication component, I found that being by myself was, like, tedious and torturous, you know, and so I really, like, couldn't, and I needed stuff that was more tangible, so I got into this ensemble theater stuff, and it was working with other people, and it was very kind of playful and body-centered, and that was really helpful, and there were a couple of years where I was, like, stacking rocks as an artistic practice. I was just, like, it was just kind of this thing to kind of get me out of my head, and I had it in my head, like, well, I should be writing, and I was like, you know what, like, let me just give myself permission to do this thing that I feel called to do, rather than, you know, to expend so much energy trying to be somebody I think I'm supposed to be, you know, so I just had to stay really present with it, and the through line of all of that is, like I said, when I picked up the guitar again, like I played in my living room like for years and years and years, and didn't try and play for anybody, didn't want to play for anybody, didn't try and write any songs, like just learned other people's stuff. And it was just cathartic and healing for me to play again, because I had to stop playing for 5 or 6 years maybe. And then when I left Oregon and I moved back east, I like just started writing. I just started coming out, and I was like, oh, wow, this is maybe what I've been looking for the whole time, but I just didn't know, or I couldn't get there. I wasn't ready to get there, I guess, you know? So
I heard you say that that your old way of being creative was to get really intoxicated and then write. And I'm just curious how that worked for you. Did that work?
It did, yeah. I mean, it worked for a while. You know what I mean? Like my first sort of major accolades were in high school. I mean, people kind of liked my poetry in high school before I started using. But you know, the first kind of like, I had detention one day, and I got really high before detention, and I ended up writing this poem in detention when I was really high, and people really loved it. They were like, this is amazing, man. And I was like, sweet, you know, like, this is it, you know. And I mean, and I think honestly, in huge part, my decision to become a creative writing major in college was because in my head, I was just like, I can just be high and drunk all the time and write a thesis, like, because it's creative, and I don't have to do any research, and nobody needs to expect anything from me other than for me to be intoxicated and write something occasionally, you know? And so, I mean, that was a huge trajectory of my life that I went down, because it was just part of my process. It was easy. It was like, you know, it's almost a cop-out, you know?
I think that's so important to talk about, because so many people have that, like, myth and also, or that experience. I've definitely had that experience that I had brilliant ideas when I was high. It just like it's, and also the thing is that addiction is a long process. Mm-hmm. So it might look brilliant at the beginning, and then like later you're stumbling drunk and ill and not producing anything, but it's like kind of too late by then.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, probably with a lot of us, I mean, I can only speak for myself really, but, you know, I think the creativity is like maybe innate in us, you know? And so it was there before I started using, and it was there when I started using, and you know, it was like, I just couldn't recognize it in myself before I started using. And then other people were excited about it, so I ran with it because I wanted their love and affection and, you know, praise, basically, you know? And so, yeah, you know, it just took me down the road to this place where it wasn't really working anymore as a muse, I guess, you know? But it was the only muse I had, so, you know.
So that's such an important, thank you so much. You said that so eloquently that was the only muse you had. So then what I heard you say is you went through this process where you tried a bunch of other things, including theater and stacking rocks, and then ended up songwriting eventually. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And so can you talk about like when you started to, and I'm guessing that whole process was important. It kind of all had to happen.
Absolutely.
So now, what's your relationship with your muse? How has that shifted?
It's evolving. I mean, I've definitely I'm trying to figure that out, honestly. You know, because I think there's a part of me that has been known to go to the feminine, the living feminine muse. you know, which I'm not sure is super healthy either.
So, there's a lot of great codependent love songs as a result of that tendency in the culture.
Correct. So I've been doing a lot to sort of unpack, like, what is the muse? You know, like, is the muse an external thing, or is it actually sort of this, like, place in ourselves that we discover and can kind of tap into when we can get quiet enough or in touch enough with, you know, what's really going on, you know, and ride that current through the discomfort of it into creating something beautiful, you know, because I think that's really what it's all about.
Why are you choosing to do it on this show?
Sure, sure.
What is Recovery Focus is?
Yeah, well, I think the song will really speak for itself with this one. It's kind of almost like
perfect.
My story.
Okay, cool.
It's, yeah.
What's it called?
I think it's called Falling. It's pretty new, so I'm not even totally sure. But
fabulous.
Yeah, we'll call it Falling for the purposes here.
From the opening lines of Break On Through, I said, Mr. Mojo Rising, let me take a trip with you. Sex and drugs and rock and roll turned up to 11. I put the sugar on my tongue and now this monkey's gone to heaven. I put the sugar on my tongue and now this monkey's gone to heaven. It was the late 90s and everything seemed grand, though I was stuck behind the eight ball with a bottle in my hand. Till that fateful day, my soul skipped out of town, singing, sorry, Charlie, I gotta go, but my friend can stick around. Oh, sorry, Charlie, I gotta go, but my friend can stick around. Falling, falling. In the middle of the night, I hear you calling. In the middle of the night, I hear you calling. Keeps me falling, keeps me falling. Ain't no creature hungrier than a man without a soul. He'll take whatever he can grab to fill that empty hole. Until his waking life becomes more than he can stand. And the monkey on his back cries out, the kingdom is at hand, yeah. Monkey on his back cries out, the kingdom is at hand. So I started making passes at the suicide bridge. Her gravity was pulling hard against my will to live. Singing to myself, oh, I'm ready for the fade. I polished my baton to lead a vertical parade. Yes, I polished my baton to lead a vertical parade. Falling, falling. In the middle of the night, I hear you calling. In the middle of the night, I hear you calling. Keeps me falling, keeps me falling. Come tomorrow morn, I'll commend this body to the ground. Through the whistling wind, how sweet the sound. That's a course, Lord, you got different plans. My mama used to sing, he's got the whole world in his hands. Yes, my mama used to sing, he's got the whole world in his hands. I woke paralyzed and then the room dissolved. It said, the choice is yours, you can go extinct or you can evolve. Everything is infinite once you cleanse the doors. Sing in glory, hallelujah, I've seen the coming of the Lord. Glory, hallelujah, I've seen the coming of the Lord. Oh, falling. In the middle of the night, I hear you calling. In the middle of the night, I hear you calling. Oh, I'm falling back to you, Lord, I'm falling. Yes, I'm falling back to you, Lord, I'm falling. Falling, falling, falling.
So I'd like to ask you about, do you think your creativity or your experience as a creative person is in any way, how does that affect your recovery? Does it affect your recovery? And if so, how?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think on some level, as a creative person, maybe I'm like even additionally resistant to following directions. So... it's sometimes I find it challenging to be present with all of that, or some of the stuff that one encounters in a process of recovery. I have to maybe sometimes come to a different understanding of it than might just work for other people. You know, other people might just sort of take like a statement of fact from somebody as a statement of fact, and I need a little more unpacking, I think, you know, to make it like viable for me to believe in.
Well, yeah, that's important information. One of the ways I think of it as an artist is that when you go to any big art museum, what you see there is art students who are copying the masters, right? Because they're learning. And like, that's a lot of, like, taking direction from someone who's already done recovery, right? Or, like, learning cover songs. You said you played other people's songs before you started working on writing your own. So, like, that's a way for me. It's like an artist tool. It's like, it's an artist training tool that I can then adopt to my recovery.
Yeah, yeah. You know, what's interesting about it, I think, is that on some level for me, recovery and music are the same in the sense that they're both like the medicine for what ails me, you know? And so there's this tricky balance too sometimes where if I like overdose on recovery for something, you know, like it can be a way of escaping from my creativity, you know? And so I need to sort of balance that out as well, because there is, like anything, there are these feelings of discomfort that come up, and part of the work is learning to just live with them, you know, or to like get comfortable in the discomfort. And I think that's true for any creative person. And so I think we're sort of still back on how recovery impacts creativity, and maybe not the other way around, but you know, I mean, I think in recovery I got a better sense of how to get comfortable with the uncomfortable, which allows me to, you know, kind of wrestle with these things that are bigger and maybe older or whatever than even my need for recovery in the first place. But you know, I mean, I think too, with anything, you know, because we're creative people, there are other creative people who are always coming to recovery. Sensitive people, I think maybe more sensitive so than others, even who are already very sensitive. And, you know, there are a few guys recently that I've encountered who are creative people who are newer to recovery. And, you know, like it's that thing of being uniquely useful to be helpful to them, you know. So the fact that I'm creative makes me more useful to people who are creative, who are trying to find their way and trying to find their way through, like, you know, I used to have this muse, now I don't anymore, you know, or I used to live this way and now I don't, and you know, and it's troubled waters. I mean, it's really difficult to navigate, and I think a lot of us, because of our commitment to our art, are really reluctant to go through that uncomfortable process of being without a muse for a little while. And so, you know, like when people first put down whatever it is that they're abusing, there can be a real lure to go back to it because they're afraid that they're going to lose their art as a result of not having the crutch anymore, you know. And so, you know, I think being somebody who can be there and say, yeah, you can find a voice again, you know, not even a voice that's maybe much better and more authentic than the one that you had before, you know. It's like really your voice rather than trying to be somebody else's voice, or, you know, it's this, I think, level of authenticity that we can penetrate to the depths of when we've been around for a little while. And I think it's important for us to be there to let people who are new to recovery know that that they don't have to give up their art to live, you know, or for that matter, that their art doesn't have to kill them, you know, because I think that's the choice a lot of people are making, you know, that, well, I'd rather die an artist than live and not be one, you know, and so, how about we try and live and be one?
You said that. Introduce it again, if you would.
Yeah, of course. Back in the early, late 1800s, early 1900s, there was a sort of massive public works effort to bring water, clean water, to New York City. And a part of that was there were a lot of big dams that were built, and the result of the building of those dams were they had to flood out a lot of towns where people lived. And they just used eminent domain and came in and said, it's time for you all to move. And they built these dams, and it provided all this fresh water to New York City, which is desperately needed. But, you know, there's a lot of feeling around it. And one of them, the Kensico, which is what this song is called, is right in North High Plains, where I grew up as a kid. And, you know, so it's just inspired by that story.
So the song is called Kensico.
Kensico, yeah.
The sun don't shine and the wind don't blow on the houses down in Kensico. And the steeple still stands, but there's no one to pray. 'Cause a long time ago, all the people moved away. Well, a hotel there used to draw a crowd of the city folks looking to get out of town, but now the only people still dropping lines are the fishermen floating on what used to be the sky. Well, I built a dam around my heart, tied my feelings deep inside, but lately they've been welling up behind my eyes. I swore I'd never let them out, I swore I'd never let them flow. Thought I could drown your memory like they drowned Kensico. I grew up in the shadow of that dam, and every block became a part of who I am. But in your love I caught a glimpse of what could be without this damning shadow hanging over me. You went away when I was still a child, and the day you died, my broken heart was bleeding wild. They laid you down and placed the final stone that sealed me here behind this dam all alone. Well, I built a dam around my heart, tied my feelings deep inside, but lately they've been welling up behind my eyes. I swore I'd never let them out, I swore I'd never let them flow. Thought I could drown your memory like they drowned Kensico. But the memory of your love is like a ghost that haunts this town, and it's clawing at the stones, gonna tear the whole dam down, and the water's gonna flow, it's gonna pour on out of me. That old dam is gonna roll, it's gonna roll on out to sea, and in its wake will be revealed a broken heart that has been healed. From this love a town will grow, and we will call it Kensico. It's from this love a town will grow, and we will call it Kensico. We will call it Kensico. A beating heart called Kensico.
So thank you for making the dichotomy so clear that people think they have this false choice, which is either be an artist and let it kill them, or be clean and sober and not be an artist. So if we're going to go for that middle path, which is to be an artist and be clean and sober, that kind of requires a shift in the way we take care of ourselves, because certainly so many people are like burned up in the energy of their creativity. So I'm wondering what tools you have learned, things that you've come to find out that you need in order to take care of yourself, be clean and sober, and make art.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think when I first got started on that, a lot of what changed pretty quickly was dietary stuff. It was like really important for me to stop eating so much sugar and wheat and stuff like that. I know it's hard for people to wrap their brain around. I mean,
and can you say why you did that? Like what you
sure,
learned out of doing
that?
Sure.
I was actually having a lot of like health problems, you know, as a result of that. That in part were the result of my use. You know, it's just like an excess of stuff, that bacteria and all kinds of stuff in my body that was not healthy, you know. And so I had to really like actively detox, you know, from a lot of that stuff. And so it started with a lot of the physical.
And then what was the result of the actively detoxing from the sugar and the wheat? Or making the dietary changes?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of an awareness of, like, how crazy that stuff makes me, actually, was one thing that was really huge. You know, there's a lot of negative thinking that comes through with sugar and I find, it's just a lot easier for me to live without it because and even caffeine, man. There was a time early on in recovery when I hadn't had coffee in a while. I had a cup of coffee driving home from the beach one day, and like by the time the caffeine crashed, like I was ready to drive my car into a tree. I mean, I was just like super depressed as a result of that sort of peak and valley. And I was putting myself through that a lot with sugar and with caffeine. And I know a lot of people do in early recovery. And you know, maybe it's recommended for a certain period of time. You know, you don't want to do too many things at once. But that was an important step, first step, I think, for me, was to start to look at the physical stuff. But ultimately, I mean, I also very fortunately, shortly thereafter, through a series of serendipitous events, ended up in a Qigong class, which is like a Chinese movement meditation, very internally focused, very gentle. And I've been practicing that pretty much my entire recovery, and as much as possible. It does wonders for quieting my mind and all the negative self-talk. And even further into recovery, I ended up doing some traveling in India and China, and you know, like really some soul-seeking kind of spiritual pilgrimage stuff. And ultimately coming back here and starting to study more like indigenous American traditions, South American traditions, and using a lot of that healing modalities as well to unpack and get to some of this stuff. So, you know, recovery wasn't the be-all and end-all for me. There's a lot of other stuff that I think goes with it and goes hand-in-hand with it and is really, really helpful to peace of mind and heart.
Somewhere down in Cherokee, a woman waits for me. And she believes with all her heart that we are meant to be. Sometimes I wanna run to her. Sometimes I wanna run to her. Sometimes I wanna run to her. Beneath the rose of Sharon, I asked her for her hand. And I swear I'd have married her if I was half a man. I don't know why I do the things I do. I don't know why I do the things I do. I don't know why I do the things I do to myself. Oh, how do you love what's broken or stomach the things you can't stand? I'm learning to live with the man that I am. I've scrutinized the ledger. Still I cannot see how I became the very things I tried hard not to be. Like a moth to an open flame, like a moth to an open flame, like a moth to an open flame I fly. Oh, how do you love what's broken or stomach the things you can't stand? I'm learning to live with the man that I am.